And I was like, oh my God, I'm pregnant. It was just crazy. We looked at each other like, what?
Are we really ready for this moment? Like, we were so excited and like we knew it was gonna happen. But then in that moment of like, holy cow, like this is actually happening.
I took that onesie and I made a cute little sign that said, hi, daddy, I can't wait to meet you. And I put the positive test and I laid it all out on our dining room table. And then I sat for like 2 hours.
You've landed on the From Bumps to Birth podcast. I'm your host, Ricky Hamley. As a crazy mom of six and a diehard birth geek, I created this space for parents to come and share their unique journeys to parenthood. Whether it's been smooth sailing or bumps along the way, there's no journey alike. So help me in honoring these stories and sit back, relax, and let your inner birth geek indulge. What's up, everyone? It's been some time. I am so excited to get this podcast back up and running. Today we have Giovanna with us, and she's going to be sharing a little bit about her first birth story and then her most recent birth story with her daughter. So without further ado, Giovanna, thank you so much for being here. Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I'm Giovanna. I am married to Jerry. We've been married just under 4 years. We have a daughter together, Kinley, and she's 8 months old. And then I have Elijah from a previous marriage, and he is 10.
Fabulous. Well, do you want to just jump right in with your story? And
yeah,
can't wait to hear.
I'm going to start with Elijah's pregnancy first. His pregnancy was pretty normal, uncomplicated. I had not a lot of nausea or vomiting. I think I only got sick like 3 or 4 times. However, like if I didn't eat, I would notice that I would be nauseous. So between being hungry all the time and if I felt nauseous, I would eat. And so I ate all the time. And I know that like people think, oh, well, yeah, you're pregnant. Of course you eat all the time. Well, no, I ate round the clock consistently. I would wake up in the middle of the night to eat, like 1 to 2 times a night to just eat. And I gained 65 pounds. But I also had the mentality of I'm eating for two. So I can eat whatever I want, whenever I want, and however much I want. And I would just bounce back and be just fine. I surprisingly passed my 1 hour glucose test. And I say that surprisingly just because of how much I ate all the time. But I do think that later in my pregnancy, I developed gestational diabetes, which I can talk more about that later. At the end of my pregnancy, I did have some slight elevation of my blood pressure. And I had a nurse midwife during this pregnancy. And we had the discussion of induction if I hadn't gone into labor on my own, which most of the time when you take a nurse midwife route or a midwife route, like induction is like the last thing on their mind. So, you know, taking into consideration her professional opinion, I agreed that if I hadn't gone into labor by 40 weeks on my own, that we would induce. And so on my 39 week appointment, which I was like 39 and 4, we did strip my membranes, and that was on a Monday. So on Tuesday the 18th, right around 2 p.m., I was sitting at my computer desk just working on some stuff, and then I felt really wet, kind of like that feeling like when you first start your period. I know this graphic, I'm sorry. That's kind of what it felt like. So I went to the restroom and I changed my clothes and I put a pad on because I wasn't sure like if my water was leaking or if I just straight up peed myself. So I put a pad on, and I went about my business. Then, about a half hour later, I had realized that I had saturated two pads. So, one pad every 15 minutes I was changing. So, I knew that it was my water leaking, and it wasn't just me peeing my pants. But I was not having contractions. So, I called my mother-in-law at the time, and I said, hey, you know, I'm pretty sure my water is leaking, not having contractions, and so I'm just going to rest and drink some water and make sure I stay hydrated, and we'll see what happens. She was like, okay, let me know. And so she gets home from work, not anything major going on, not contracting. I ate dinner. My husband at the time was working graveyard, and so it came time to wake him up for his work shift. And he was also dealing with some health issues at that time, so he wasn't driving. So I would drive him to work and pick him up from work. And so I asked my mother-in-law to go with me that night, because she knew what was going on, because I had not yet told my husband at the time that my water was leaking. I didn't want to just go into the hospital and just spend all my time there if I didn't have to. So we drop him off at work, and I was feeling hungry. So I was like, let's go to IHOP. And my mother-in-law was like, okay. So we go to IHOP, and again, it's 10:30 at night, and I'm hungry. So I'm eating chicken fried steak and mashed potatoes and gravy. Like, no joke, I ate all the time. And then I decide to go to the bathroom, and I start my contractions to start. Like, oh, I think that's a contraction. And, you know, they weren't regular. They weren't consistent, really. However, we lived 45 minutes from the hospital with good traffic. Terrible traffic, it could be easily an hour. So I made the decision to call labor and delivery at the hospital. That's, we were delivering at the hospital with my nurse midwife. And they are like, well, if you think that you are having, if you think that your water is broke, definitely come in and be triaged. And so we decided to go in. And, of course, I knew that I was going to be admitted because I knew that my water was leaking. And so they told me, you know, they told me to get some rest as much as I can, and we'll see how the night goes. I slept from 12 p.m. to 7 a.m., no problem. So, like, we get to, so when we got to the hospital, it was like my contractions had decided to stop. But of course they kept me because my water was leaking. So, and then it's 7 a.m. and, my nurse midwife is making her rounds, and she comes in and she's like, I really think it's going to be important to start IV antibiotics because your water has been leaking for upwards of 18 hours. And she's like, and you're not having any contractions, and so we should really consider about starting Pitocin. So I agreed to both the IV antibiotics and the Pitocin to get my labor going, as it's, you know, been 18 hours of leaking water. So I ordered a crispy chicken salad with ranch, probably the best thing I ate my entire pregnancy at that moment. And then I went about my way. I continued to walk and bounce. And about 2 o'clock, my nurse midwife comes in to check me. And I'm only dilated at a 2. Which I should point out that I was only dilated at a 2 when I came in the night before, when they checked me. So 24 hours of water leaking and still no contractions really with the Pitocin even. And I'm not progressing very quickly. So my nurse midwife asks if she can put a, I might get this wrong, I'm so sorry, but it's like to put a device up around my, my bag of waters to see how strong my contractions were. And then she was like, I'll come back in a couple hours and we'll see. So she came back, it was about 4, and she's like, well, we're seeing that you are having contractions, but they're not strong enough to progress your labor. And so I recommend that we break your water, finish breaking it to get things going. And I was like, okay, fine, let's do this. And so she breaks my water, and my pain level went from 0 to 900. Okay, really like 15, but I immediately started hyperventilating, and I threw up my salad that I had eaten earlier, and my nurse was like, I told you to eat something light. And I looked at her, and I was like, I was hungry, and I would probably do it again with my next child. And she just kind of like backed up, like, oh, I'm sorry, I overstepped a boundary kind of like moment. But so I was vomiting and I was hyperventilating and I was just out of control. I could not control myself and my headspace to be able to get myself under control to be able to breathe through my contractions. And like, obviously I didn't really realize what a contraction would like really feel like because my water was cushioning it so much. But the Pitocin, I don't think that they had turned it down at all when they did that. And so it was just awful. So I said, give me my epidural. And my nurse, my wife was like, are you going to be mad at me if I give you your epidural? And I said, no, why would I be mad at you? I was like, I'd be mad at myself, if anything. I was like, but that's why I want my epidural. I can't handle this. So with having the Pitocin and the IV, they were wanting to continuously monitor me. And I think it's just to check like heart rate of baby with the Pitocin. And so I was hooked up to all these monitors. And they had like a mobile monitor, which was kind of nice. And so I was walking around the hospital area, the labor and delivery area. And I would sit on the birth ball and I'd walk some more. And at one point I wanted to try to sit in the tub. Well, I was huge, so my skin was super stretched. And the bands that they had on me, like, were super uncomfortable and made my skin itch. And like almost immediately of getting into the tub, the itchiness went from like a 4 to a 25. Like, I could not handle it. And I was like, nope, get me out of here. So I just continued to walk the halls and bounce on the ball and just tried to get things going. I wasn't really feeling any contractions. I was not in pain at all. I don't know how many times they upped my Pitocin. I'd never paid attention to that. So around 12, I was hungry, and my nurse was like, you should probably eat something light, like toast. And I'm like, girl, you're crazy. I'm starving. So she checked me right then just to get an idea where I was at as they were starting the process of getting my epidural, and I was 3 centimeters. And I'm like, yep, this is right for me, because if this is the amount of pain that I'm in right now, I have no idea how I'm going to be able to make it to 10 and push out a child. So they give me my epidural, and as soon as I'm not feeling any pain, I'm in my bed and I fall asleep. And I sleep for the next 5 hours. And 10 p.m., wake up, and I'm like, I have a lot of pressure and I feel like I need to push. And so they called my nurse in and nurse said, yep, you're ready. You're 10. So they called my nurse midwife in and prepared to push this baby out. Well, I had massive heartburn from puking earlier and being mostly on my back while sleeping. And so between my contractions and pushing, I was drinking ice water. And then when I was pushing and having the contraction, it was forcing me to throw up. And so it was this vicious cycle of drinking water, pushing and vomiting at the same time while trying to birth my baby. This went on for 2 hours. And finally, Elijah's head came out and he had his hand up by his ear. So that was made it harder to push him out. And we were really concerned about me ripping because of that. But thankfully, I didn't. I just had a superficial tear. And they put him on the scale to weigh him. And they're like, oh, he's 9 pounds, 2 ounces. And my nurse midwife was like, what? Weigh him again. She did not believe that at all. And they're like, yep, 9 pounds, 2 ounces. So he was born at 12:06 a.m. on his estimated due date of May 20th, and he was 9 pounds, 2 ounces. He did have to spend 2 days in the NICU because his blood sugars dropped, and at the time, I wasn't sure why that was happening, and so when we were in the NICU, I asked his doctor, I said, what usually causes that? And he said, usually it's because mom has gestational diabetes. And later on, I asked my nurse midwife, if it was a possibility that I developed it later. She said, that could have been a possibility. So there was that, which makes me think that I developed it later, because he did. He spent 2 days in the NICU. And he had a really hard time learning to nurse. After he was born, he wasn't rooting for me at all. He was just kind of really sleepy and not wanting to be very lively. I wouldn't say he was lethargic out by any means, but, you know, he was awake and alert, but he wasn't wanting to try to nurse, and he just was kind of blah. But that was because his blood sugars were dropping. So that's the pregnancy and birth of Elijah. And now, you know, he's 10 years old and thriving and doing great. And he's really tall and just a really big kid. Now I'll move on to Kinley's birth story. So Kinley's story kind of starts a little bit before I found out I was pregnant with her. Since having Elijah, I've struggled with my weight. I never lost the full 65 pounds that I gained when I was pregnant with him. And then even after being pregnant with him, I lost a little bit, but then I started gaining weight. And so I was on a journey to lose some weight. So I started intermittent fasting in April, which was working really good for me. I didn't necessarily restrict myself of the foods that I was eating or necessarily what I was drinking. I was definitely more mindful of it. I would even ask myself 2 questions that kind of helped keep me on track. The first one was, do I really, really want this? So whatever it was, whether it was chocolate, cake, pasta, Pepsi, whatever. Do I really, really want this? And 2, will it be worth it? And if I had said yes to either of those questions, I would eat or drink whatever it was and not feel guilty about it. Of course, I would like limit the amount that I would eat of it, but I wouldn't just not allow myself not to eat it. And if I said no to either question, I would I would put the item down and I would instead drink water. And oftentimes I found that I was eating out of boredom and not because I was really wanting something. And so I lost 13 pounds from April 1st to May 22nd, which on May 22nd, I was about 8 weeks from April 1st when I started intermittent fasting. And I noticed that I was feeling overly emotional. I was at work and one of my patients was going through a miscarriage. And after I left the exam room, I started crying as if I was mourning my own baby being lost. It was like a survivor's guilt. And it wasn't just, oh, I'm sad over this, but I was bawling. I was crying. So I went to the restroom to collect myself and I ran some cool water over my face and I was thinking to myself, last week I had some mild cramping and I had like 3 or 4 days of light pink spotting that I was anticipating to start into a full-blown period that hadn't happened yet. I wasn't really tracking my cycle because I have irregular periods anyway, and I hadn't had a normal period since having my next pilon removed 1.5 years before. So I just was like, I've been kind of tired lately. I'm way overly emotional, and I just had this little bit of cramping with the bleeding. Maybe I should take a pregnancy test. So the clinic that I was working at provided free pregnancy tests for patients, and so I decided to take one. And I placed my pregnancy test on top of my urine cup in the bathroom, and I washed my hands and grabbed a paper towel, not even thinking that, you know, I wasn't getting excited over it. And I looked down, and there's 2 little pink lines. And I was so thrilled and I cried because I wanted this since I had my next one removed. I wanted it for 1.5 years. And we weren't not trying, but we weren't trying either at this point. So I was just so overwhelmed with emotion.
You have me a little choked up.
Yeah, I just was like, so my doctor that I saw, my primary care provider was at the clinic, and I went to her and I was like, you see this, right? She's like, yeah, that's 2 pink lines. I'm like, I'm pregnant. She's like, you are. And so of course I consulted with her really quick about the medications that I was taking. And I had stopped taking my Excedrin obviously right away because it had, aspirin in it and I didn't need to be taking that right now. And, I had stopped taking my Wellbutrin like 2 weeks prior, because I was feeling really great and not anxiety driven, which is what I had taken it for. I will also say that when I decided to set up OB care for myself, I was working at the residency, which is an organization of resident providers they're doctors that finish medical school and have to do their residency before they can go on and have their own private practice or fellowships. And so I worked closely with them, and I knew that they are overseen by attendings who are like looking at charts consistently. It was really convenient for me to just have my OB care through them. And if at any reason during my OB care, if I wasn't happy, I wouldn't have a problem going somewhere else. So I chose 2 resident providers. So I had a team of doctors. I had Dr. Duncan and Dr. Florence, and they were absolutely wonderful. And then any of the attendings that were there would also help them with decisions with my care if needed. So at my first appointment, I was about, what I thought was 10 weeks, but later on was like only 9 weeks. I had lost a little bit more weight because I was still being mindful of what I was eating. I wasn't intermittent fasting anymore because there's just not a lot of information on it with pregnancy. But I still continued to ask myself if whatever it was that I was putting in my mouth was going to be worth it. So I had lost 7 more pounds. And my doctor was okay with this because I did have a BMI over 30. I was very overweight and actually, if you want to be technical, obese. And because my BMI was over 30, they did an early glucose test. So I had to do a 1-hour glucose test at my first appointment. And I passed that. I did talk to my doctor about my concern for developing gestational diabetes later in my pregnancy, and they totally were understanding of that. And so we decided to do my glucose test towards the 28-week mark versus the 24-week mark. At 14 weeks, I had a regular appointment, and when you are working with residents, they, you know, they're still learning, how to use things correctly, be able to find heart tones, and, you know, learning different positions. And my doctor was actually having a hard time finding a heart tone. And that day at work was just really hard. I was working in an OB clinic, and we had a patient who's been trying to pass her baby that she miscarried a couple weeks prior on her own, and she couldn't. So they had to go in and do a manual vacuum assist. And I was there. I wasn't in the room for that, but I was there. Like, I was her MA that roomed her and got her in the room and was just, I knew. And I had to tell myself, like, over and over that we're doing this because she has not been able to pass this baby on her own, who has not had a fetal heart tones for 3 weeks at this point, and that it wasn't a full-on abortion of a live baby. It was a miscarriage that she had had and that we needed to go in and care for her. And we didn't want to send her to the ER to do that because, I mean, let's be real, the ER is no place for any woman going through such a terrible thing to have to go through there. There's no compassion there. They are there like, oh, let's get you fixed. It's just not a place for a woman to have to go through that. And so I told my doctor, I said, we have to do an ultrasound because I cry.
No, you're okay.
I said, we have to do an ultrasound because I have to hear my baby's heartbeat. Because I was there when my patient had to have her procedure done and just needed to be surrounded with love and compassion. And I just needed to make sure that my baby was okay. I said, I held her hand after the procedure and just cried with her. And I just needed to know. And so my doctor was like, yep, absolutely. We will get the ultrasound and we will do an ultrasound. No questions asked. And I just loved that. I loved that she was just so like, yep, this is absolutely 100% about you and your baby and making sure that you're both okay. So we did the ultrasound and there she was, her little heart fluttering and her like gummy bear little beam going on. And it was just really a beautiful moment for me. And my doctor's like, you of all people, why were you working OB today? And I'm like, well, I love OB and I'm kind of a birth geek, but you know. So, but I will say that I did not experience anything like that anymore during my pregnancy. So that was good. But it was just one of those moments where you're just like, no, I need this. And I was so fortunate and happy to have such a great caring team of doctors to basically when I said that I needed something or wanted something, I'm like, okay. I was also a lot more educated this time around being pregnant than I was with Elijah. At 18 weeks, that's when my Braxton Hicks contractions started. And I was experiencing some SPD as well. And it like even hurt to like lift my leg to put my pants on. It was awful. 23 weeks, I started gaining weight, and this is when I really started getting emotional during my pregnancy. And looking back, I think it was more anxiety and not emotion. And listening to different podcasts and even after being pregnant, I love listening to them. I realized that it was definitely anxiety in my pregnancy and not just emotionalness. So yeah, like I said, I started gaining weight because I hadn't gained any weight, but I hadn't lost any weight since my first appointment. And so here I'm at 23 weeks and I start gaining weight, and I wasn't ready for that. And I just started crying over that. Cause I just wanted to make sure that I was trying to be as healthy as I could for me and my baby. About 30 weeks, I was having terrible pelvic pain, and not just like SPD, but like, I just felt like there was a lot of, restriction inside my vagina. And I'm sorry, this is kind of graphic. But like, I didn't even want my husband to come near me. Like, I didn't want to have sex. I like don't put anything inside my vagina. Like, it just hurt so bad. And I was doing some research, and it's not super uncommon for women who are pregnant to get varicose veins inside of their vagina. And so I brought this concern to my doctor, and she's like, well, she's like, that could very well be. She's like, I would like to do a pelvic just to see, you know, kind of get a baseline of where we're at and see, you know, if they're mild, if they're severe, if we need to send you for like a pelvic floor therapist, that kind of thing. And so I agreed, and she did say that I had mild varicoses. So she recommended that I wear compression stockings to help with blood flow. I did get in to see our OMT's doctors. Basically, they do adjustments on the body like a chiropractor would do. And also did show me some different stretches and positions of like abdominal workouts that would be help with not only the SPD that I was having, but the varicose veins that I had. And I did go in and get my lower back and hips adjusted quite a bit. And I did have injections done as well, because it was just awful.
Were the injections for the SPD?
They were there. So they're called trigger port injections, and they were there to help like loosen up the muscle and stuff around my back.
Oh, okay.
Because when they adjust me, like my hips were out of place every time.
Right.
And so they adjust me and they help loosen up those muscles around it, so they weren't so tense. So it did help. Okay. But it was just awful. And again, still having Braxton Hicks contractions consistently, you know, every 45 minutes to an hour. Also at my 30-week appointment, I started back on my Wellbutrin for my anxiety, because I just, like I said, I was crying. I cried at every appointment from 23 weeks on, and I just felt really overwhelmed. At this point, I was a supervisor in my position at work, and there was just a lot going on with that and a lot going on at home, and I was really having a hard time with it. And I realized that anxiety in pregnancy is like 10 times worse than just anxiety when you're not pregnant, and it's almost like obsessive compulsive. And I realize that now. I did not realize that then. But starting back on my Wellbutrin, my doctor's like, well, I don't usually do that medication. I usually do a different medication just because it's not tested on pregnant women very often. And I said, well, Wellbutrin's really worked well for me. At this point, her heart is developed. Her lungs are doing, you know, fine. She's still got to develop them over the next 6 weeks or so. She's not having any issues with her heart that we've seen ultrasound. I said, so I think that I'll take the risk and just take my Wellbutrin. It's a low dose. And she's like, okay. At my 34-week appointment, I had asked to take a leave of absence from work. I asked to take 2 weeks off of work just to be able to not worry about things and, like, get my mental health in check to be able to prepare myself mentally for this baby. Best decision that I made my whole pregnancy. So I was planning on going back to work at 36 weeks, but then I ended up with the flu. And I was having some contractions, and so I told my husband, I said, let's just go over to L&D triage and see. It's early in the morning. Clinics aren't open yet. It's a Monday morning. And he said, okay. So we go and we see, and they hook me up, and they're like, well, you are having some contractions, but nothing that we, would alarm us. And at this point, like, if you went into labor, we wouldn't necessarily stop labor. But they're not consistent at all. I've had a cold through my whole 2 weeks of being off work. So I had this cough and cold anyway. Who knows? Maybe it was Corona. I'm kidding. I'm totally kidding. But so they're like, do you think you have the flu? And I'm like, well, I don't think so. I'm just tired and I'm just probably new fluids and go home. So they didn't even give me an IV at that point. They were like, go home, drink plenty of water, and follow up with your doctor this afternoon because I had an appointment scheduled. And I said, okay. I went home and I slept. And I slept until about an hour before my appointment, just enough time to get ready to go. And I got to the doctor's office and I was telling my doctor, I was feeling better. And then it was like downhill and I slept probably 20 hours in the last 24 hours. She's like, oh. And she's like, well, how about we swab you for flu? I'm like, sure, like you can. I don't know what that's going to do to change your treatment for me. So they swabbed me, and sure enough, I tested positive for the flu, which looking back, my son's school was closed down like that Friday before Christmas. And I picked him up that Friday and then took him back Christmas Eve. I had him through Christmas and took him back Christmas Day to his dad's. And the day of Christmas, he had a low-grade fever. And it was 2 days later that I really started feeling like my cold was going from better to worse. And then I tested positive that Monday. So kind of all makes sense in hindsight. So they gave me another week off of work to recoup and get better. So 37 weeks, I went back to work and I was going through my work week. A lot of people were really surprised to see me, like, you're back? Yeah, I'm back. And by Thursday, my Braxton Hicks contractions went from every 30 minutes or so to every 15 minutes. I didn't really think anything of it. And also, right around my 37-week mark, I was consistently sitting on my birth ball and doing, like, figure eights and rocking motions and bouncing. I was also drinking labor and prep tea. It's designed to help strengthen your uterus for preparing yourself for birth, and it actually tasted really good. I really loved it, and so I would drink that in the mornings and in the evening, and I would bounce on my birth ball. So went through the weekend that way, and then went to work Monday morning. Still contractions 15 minutes apart, not anything, and they weren't intense or anything. There was no pressure or anything with them. They were just racks and hikes, I assumed. Then Tuesday morning, the 14th of January, I woke up at 6 a.m. and I went into the kitchen and made my tea, and I was sitting on my birth ball and drinking my tea, and I noticed that my contractions were different. They had like a downward pressure to them. They were not intense or painful at all, but they were just different. And so I started timing them, and they were 8 minutes apart. So I called into work and I said, I'm not coming to work today. I'm almost positive I'm in early stages of labor. And around 8 a.m., I was cooking breakfast, which I detest cooking breakfast. I'll cook dinner and lunch anytime, any day. I hate cooking breakfast. And my husband comes out of our bedroom and he looks at me and he's like, what are you doing here? And why are you cooking breakfast? And I said, well, I'm hungry and I need a good hearty meal for the day. And he's like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, I'm almost positive, like 90% positive I'm in labor. And he's like, we need to go to the hospital right now. And I'm like, no. We're not going to the hospital until my contractions are like 5 minutes apart, lasting a minute, you know, the 5-1-1. And so around 10 a.m., I just really wanted to take a shower. And my shower is just a single person shower. And I didn't want to stand. So I took my birth ball in there with me. And that was probably the best decision ever because I was able to just sit on my birth ball and let the water run on me. And I was like, oh, yes. And I could feel my contractions, the intensity of them being more. I got out of the shower and I said to my husband, I said, we need to run some errands. We got to go get some dog food. We gotta get some snacks. Like, do you wanna go with me? And he's like, all right. So we go to the local Tractor Supply store to pick up the dog food for the dogs. And then we run over to Walmart to get some stuff over there. And while we're in Walmart, I just wanted to squat with every contraction that I was having. And it was like super comfortable just to hang on my cart and squat and just be there. And it kind of like freaked my husband out a little bit. He's like, we need to go to the hospital right now. I'm like, no, we're fine. This is just comfortable. I like it. It's just like, I'm not in any pain. We're doing good. And he's like, no, we need to go to the hospital. I'm like, no, my contractions are still like 7 minutes apart. We're not going. So he starts timing my contractions and he's like, no, your contractions are 4 minutes apart. We need to go. And so we drive back home, which is about a 20 to 25 minute drive to go get our bags and car seat and all that stuff. Because although I didn't want to go to the hospital, I knew it was going to like ease my husband's anxiety that he was having. And so I agreed. I'm like, they're just going to send me home. We take our time getting to the hospital. We didn't like get there real fast. It's about 4 p.m. when we arrived. And they get me back into triage. And they check me. And I'm 3 centimeters and 50% effaced. And my nurse is like, well, like, you're probably just in very early labor. Probably gonna send you home, but I'll check with the attending. And the attending agreed to let me walk around the hospital. So we're walking around the hospital, and we're on the second floor, I think it is. And we at the very end of the hallway of the second floor, there's a staircase that goes down into the cafeteria. I'm like, well, this is perfect because I can climb stairs and continue to squat with my contractions, and it'll be really great. And, you know, I'm making these laps, and I'm getting down on my hands and knees and moving my hips, and just, you know, staff is coming like, do you need a wheelchair? Do we need to get a labor and delivery? I'm like, no, I'm good. We're good. You know, my contractions are about 2 to 3 minutes apart, and, you know, I'm doing this, and it's good, and I'm breathing for them. And we get back to triage, and my nurse is like, what's your pain level? And I'm like, it's not pain. There's some intensity and it's some pressure, but it's not pain. And I was like, I don't want to consider it to be painful because I'm trying, I would like to try to have a all natural birth if possible. And I asked that not anybody bring up any kind of pain relief unless I do. And she was like, okay. So they're pretty good about that, really. So we get back to the room and she checks me and I'm 3.5 centimeters, 50% evased, and that's about 6 o'clock. And I'm just like, oh, you're gonna send me home. And she's like, are you feeling these? And I'm like, yeah, I'm feeling them, you know. She's like, well, let's hook you up. We hook up and the monitor is kind of picking them up, but not really. So she had me press a button every time I had a contraction. And so, you know, they're monitoring me for like 10, 15 minutes or whatever. And so I told Jerry, my husband now, I said, go ahead and go to the cafeteria and get yourself some dinner. They close at 7. And so he went and got some food for him. And he is gone about 10 minutes. And he comes back, and the nurse gets back in about that same time, so it's about 6:20 or so. And she says, the attending agreed to let you walk around for another hour, and then we'll evaluate you from there. She said, but don't be surprised if they send you home. And I said, okay. I said, well, I have to use the restroom. So I got over to the restroom. Jerry went out to the waiting room, because at this point, we're still in triage. And some of my other birth team are here, but they can't go back with me. I can only have one person back there with me. So I go and use the restroom, and I have 3 back-to-back contractions on the toilet. And, like, it took me probably 10 minutes to be able to get through all that, to use the restroom and wipe, and to get off the toilet. And I had my bloody show during that time too. And I'm just like, oh, that really hurts. Like, I'm really moaning through these contractions. They had kind of transitioned from the time that I got up to go to the bathroom and walking to the bathroom to sitting on the toilet. They went from breathing through them to moaning through them. So I get out to the waiting room, and it's about 6:30, and my sweet husband brought me a grilled cheese sandwich and some tater tots, which was one of my favorites during pregnancy. I took 2 bites of my sandwich, and I was like, I can't eat this. I can't eat this right now. And I walk over to, like, the window, and I'm looking out over the parking lot, and I'm, like, contracting. And I walk over by where my husband is sitting. And I kind of just wanted to be left alone. Like, I didn't want to really anybody in my face. And my poor husband was totally anxiety driven and, like, didn't really know what to do. He was my water boy. He got me cold towels and water. That was his job. So I'm on the chair facing the back. My knees are on the chair. And I'm having contraction, and Jerry says something. I have no idea what it was, but I looked at him and I said, shut up right now. And I'm like moaning through this contraction. And I looked at my friend Crystal and I said, I need an emesis bag. I'm going to throw up. So she goes to the clerk, to the receptionist, says she needs an emesis bag. She feels like she's going to throw up. So she gets one and she grabs the nurse. And the nurse comes back out and she's like looking at me. And she's like, let's get you back to triage and we'll check you again. And I look at the clock and it's 6:40 and I'm like, it's only been 20 minutes. It hasn't been an hour. And she's like, I realize this, honey, but let's get you back to triage and checked. So we get back there. It probably takes me, I don't know, 10 minutes to walk back there through my contractions. Cause they're like, at this point, you know, like every minute and a half to 2 minutes. And she checks me and she's like, oh, we are omitting you. And I'm like, okay, where am I at? And she's like, you're 7 centimeters and 100%. I'm like, what? I was like, I progressed that much in 20 minutes? And she's like, yep. So about 7 p.m., I look over at Jerry through this process. And I'm like, you have to call my sister. Because I told her, I'm like, we're just in triage. We haven't been admitted yet. I'll call you. And so he called her and he's like, you got to get here. She's 7 centimeters and they're admitting her. And she's like, why didn't you call me sooner? And he's like, well, it's happening quickly. So she gets there. It's probably about 7:45, 8 o'clock. And they get me into a room. And at this point, both of my resident doctors were able to come in, which is really awesome. Usually it's just one or the other because of schedules and whatnot. So both of my resident doctors were able to be there. And Dr. Duncan checks me or gets me on the bed and she checks me and I'm 8 centimeters. And I'm like, great, we're doing awesome. I was like, I need to get off of this bed right now. I cannot be on here. And so my sister helps me get off the bed and I'm standing and I'm having these contractions and I'm moving through them. And she's like, would you like to try to get on your knees, on your hands and knees on the bed? She's like, when I was in labor with Sam, that was really helpful. And I said, yeah, we can try. And with my SPD that I had, I couldn't lift my leg at all to get up onto that bed. And it was just going to be too much for me to try to sit on the bed and then roll and get up on my hands and knees. I'm like, nope, we're just going to stand. We're standing here. And I was like, I want that tub ready. I don't even know if they got the tub ready. But I was like, I want that tub ready. So then Dr. Duncan and Dr. Florence were like, well, we just want to make sure her head is down. And I think it was more of a teaching moment for them because I don't recall that ever being an issue with Elijah when I was in labor with him, which is fine. I'm always all about teaching. Like, you want med students in there? Great. Bring them in. More residents? Great. Bring them in. Like, I'm all about education and teaching. So, they wanted me to get on that bed and I was like, that's not going to happen. You're going to have to do this ultrasound with me standing. And they tried and tried and tried. So finally, my Aunt Cindy, my husband's Aunt Cindy, our Aunt Cindy, was behind the bed, like sideways. Does that make sense? So she was standing behind there, and then my sister sat on the bed, and she was supporting my sister, and then my sister was supporting me so I could lean back enough for them to do the ultrasound to see head down. And so they were able to see that she was head down. And then they leave the room. And like I said earlier, my husband was my water boy. So he kept bringing me towels, cold towels and water. And he was really great. I don't really remember from the 8 to 9. I don't have a lot of concept of time. But at one point I wanted my epidural. And my sister's like, she's like, sister, you can do this, and you're awesome, and you're amazing. And she's like, there's no wrong way in this. If you want your epidural, I can ask you to get your epidural. If you want me to coach you, I can coach you. What do you want? And I was like, I think I want my epidural. And she's like, okay. She's like, just breathe. So she goes and she tells them she would like her epidural. And, like, everybody in that room, except for my husband, knew that I was not getting my epidural. Okay. So my doctor comes back in and, you know, checks me just to see where I'm at prior to getting the epidural. I was 8.5 centimeters with a bulging bag of water. So my husband really truly thought that the epidural was going to be like a shot and it's right now. But in reality, and I only had a hep lock-in. I did not have any IVs or anything that affected me. In reality, you had to have 30 to 45 minutes of fluid before they would give you your epidural. So there's that. So then my team of doctors, so the nurses are, you know, trying to hook up the IVs to me, like they're just accommodating me at this point. My team of doctors leave, and the next contraction, I feel her head move down. And then I was like, oh, she's coming down. My sister, oh, good. That's a good thing. And then the next contraction, like 30 seconds later, my body is trying to eject her from me. Like, I'm not pushing. She's eject. I'm like, my body's ejecting. And my sister's like, oh, I know that grunt. And she's like, and it's probably like literally not even a full minute when they left the room. And Cindy walks out there, and she's like, you better come back in here. That baby is coming. And mind you, I'm still standing, okay? And Dr. Duncan comes in, and she sees me. My sister's on this side of me. My friend Chris is on this side of me. My husband's, like, yelling at the nurse, I guess. Like, where's her epidural? She's like, she's not getting it. She's not getting it. Dr. Duncan gets down on her knees, and she looks up, and she's like, oh, she has her hand up, and she's like, don't push. I'm like, I'm not pushing. My body's ejecting. She's like, I need a glove. I need a glove. Don't push. Don't push. I need a glove. 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 Don't push. And then my water breaks all over her. And Kinley's head is coming, and she only gets one glove on, and she, like, gets her, she's like, don't push. I gotta get around her head here. And then the next contraction, my body just ejects. I didn't even have to push, just completely ejects her out of me. And Dr. Duncan barely catches her, and it was just absolutely incredible and amazing. And I was like, I looked at them, and I'm like, I'm a fucking badass. And they're like, yes you are. The attending doctor was Dr. Winslow, and she was like, in the 20 years that I have been practicing medicine, I've never seen a birth like that. And she's like, I've seen quite a few of them. Never seen a birth like that. That was absolutely 100% incredible. And both Dr. Duncan and Dr. Florence hadn't experienced anything like that either, you know? And they were just, like, totally amazed. And a week prior to my birth, I had a patient in my OB clinic that I worked in who had a very traumatic birth. I won't go into detail, but it really made Dr. Florence rethink OB. She's like, I don't want to take on any OB patients ever again. That was the most traumatic and terrifying thing that I ever had to experience, and I don't want to do that again. And so it was really just a wonderful and magical moment for her to be able to witness something that is supposed to be totally natural and uncomplicated, and what our bodies are truly designed to do to make a birth so wonderful. And so that kind of, like, gave her a little bit of hope, I think. So Kinley was born at 8:57 p.m. 2 weeks before her due date, and she was 8 pounds 3 ounces. A running joke throughout my whole pregnancy with her was that it was gonna be a 15 hour or less labor and delivery, and she was gonna weigh 7 to 8 pounds, and it was gonna be like 5 to 10 minutes of pushing, because Elijah's labor and delivery is so long, and he was so big. So she made her arrival.
She checked all those boxes.
Checked them off. Done. And she's just been great. I was able to nurse her really well. She latched on really good and nursed and did really great with that. And then I ended up having gallbladder surgery in the middle of COVID. So I couldn't take my baby to the hospital with me to nurse her. And the pump that they had there at the hospital was awful. So we just really continued to try. And I continued to try to pump and feed her her bottle. And about 5.5 months, I'm like, okay, we're both, like, can't handle this anymore. So she's transitioned over to formula. And now she, being 8 months old, she is eating most solids that we eat because we are doing the baby-led weaning with her. So she's just thriving and doing really well.
Well, fantastic. There's so many parts of your story that I love the way you told it. And it was so intriguing. I was on the edge of my seat the whole time, honestly. But you said something kind of earlier on that I just thought, wow, I wish that everybody are all like medical professionals and like care team and providers had this mindset. You said when you asked for the ultrasound from your doctor, they were all about, it's about you and baby being okay. And I think a lot of times, like, especially with women who are prone to anxiety and deal with anxiety during their pregnancies, you know, they have those moments where, you know, panic kind of sets in a little bit. And I have several women that I've actually talked to that have, like, you know, they will ask me questions or, you know, or my advice. Usually they're my friends or just, you know, people that I are acquaintances that know that I, you know, I've had a lot of kids myself. And so they just want my opinion. And they're like, you know, I'm having doubts about this. And I'm really, or, you know, they've dealt with miscarriage or loss or something of that nature. And they just, they need that reassurance. And I feel like a lot of times they don't get that. They get brushed off. They'll call in, they'll talk to the nurse. And the nurse will say, oh, well, that's normal. And you're basically back at square one. And, like, if not, if your anxiety isn't the same, it's worse. Like, and so you said that when you said that the doctor, you know, was all about you and baby being, you know, and I being okay, I really felt like you meant, like, you know, you were having a mental, you know, issue. Like, you were just like, I need to know that she is okay. And yes. I think that, you know, I know it's not easy for doctors to just be like, oh, let's have an ultrasound. But I think that if they listen to more women, that might maybe, you know, it, you know, that could aid in their chances of not dealing with depression or anxiety and stuff like that later on or even during that specific time. So I really thought that was cool that you brought that up because I think about that, but you really just put it kind of in perspective.
Yes. For me. And I truly believe that if you ever feel at any point during your pregnancy that you feel like something's wrong, you need to advocate for yourself. And if you are finding that your doctor is not listening to your needs, they work for you. You don't work for them.
Definitely. Definitely.
It's you so find important. Yourself another doctor.
So important.
Or at least get a second opinion.
Yeah, definitely.
So, being somebody who's worked in the healthcare field, that's given me a completely different perspective on things.
Yeah.
I would tell my patients all the time, you need to be your own advocate.
Yeah.
It is your healthcare and you need to take charge of it.
Yeah.
And if you truly believe that your doctor is not providing you the care that you need to find a doctor that does.
Yeah. And it's totally okay to do that.
Absolutely.
Totally okay. I think, you know, a lot of people just kind of are like, oh, I'm at this part in my pregnancy or anything in healthcare, but right. Specifically pregnancy, you know, they're saying, oh, I'm 28 weeks. Should I change now? Or I even know people who have changed like right at the last minute. I mean, in the last 3 weeks,
yeah.
You know, because it wasn't a fit for them. And especially my last birth was a VBAC. So I followed a lot of women, in a VBAC group and you know, it's really common for them up to the very last minute to find a different care provider because, you know, their doctor might go back on their word or, you know, or going against their wishes or going against, you know, research-based stuff. And
absolutely.
The woman is not into that. So,
yeah. And I, being someone who has worked in healthcare, I think that the
Not that I'm saying that it's okay for doctors to feel that way or think that way. I think that they should just be totally upfront with their patients. But I could be wrong, but I think that a big thing is liability, because most malpractice suits are in OB. And so I understand wanting to make sure that all your bases are covered. But if you're just like, yep, 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 but then in reality you're not, you need to be upfront with your patients about that.
Definitely.
So.
Well, we both have our little ones here. And it was actually really cool that Giovanna, this is my very first in-person recording. And she brought Kinley. Yes. Kinley. She brought Kinley with her. She's 8 months old, and I'm sure you guys have probably heard her in the background a couple times, but this is real life. We're moms, and so, yeah. But I appreciate you taking the time out of your day to share your stories with us, and I wish you the best of luck in the future.
Great. Thank you.
Hey, y'all. That's all the time we have for this episode, but be sure to catch up on all of our episodes on your favorite podcast platform. If you or someone you know are interested in being a guest on our show, find us on Instagram at From Bumps to Birth, or you can message me, Ricky Hamley, on Facebook. Thank you so much for your support and listening, and until next time, I am your host, Ricky Hamley.